Larry Reed, president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, is going to join us now for a look at the year in review politically and economically in Michigan and what we can look forward to in 2008. I get accused of bashing state government from time to time. That is not my intention. I'm simply trying to lay out a truthful picture for folks so they will have good information with which to deal as they approach upcoming elections and upcoming decisions that they have to make about their family's future. Larry Reed joins us now. Larry, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, my pleasure, John.
Always a pleasure to talk to folks from the Mackinac Center because you folks seem to be kind of steeped in truth at the Mackinac Center and reality as opposed to some of what we're getting out of Lansing right now.
Well, we sure would like to think so. I wish we could get more of the message through to our legislators, though.
What is going on with the legislature? How in the world can they expect us to have any respect for them when they pull a Keystone Cops show like we had as we approached October 1st?
Well, you're absolutely right in characterizing what the legislature did this year as a Keystone Cops maneuver. And I think just about every legislator would have to agree. They're not very happy with what they did or the long time that it took to do it. There was gridlock, there was dysfunctionality, there was intense bickering, and in the end, what we got was very harmful to Michigan's economy, which is already in the dumpster compared to most of every other state.
We have a situation in Michigan where we are hemorrhaging talented people. They are leaving the state. How bad is that?
We have the highest outbound migration of population of any state in the union, John, and it appears as though it may even be accelerating, even in advance of the full effect of the recent $1.5 billion in tax hikes. So that doesn't bode well for 2008, but at the moment, we are hemorrhaging people, jobs, and businesses. Tomorrow, the Mackinac Center will release some numbers based upon the latest census data. I don't want to reveal what we have found just yet, but I can tell you it's not a pretty picture. We have lost tens of thousands of people in just the last year and a half alone.
Here is a question. By the way, our lines are open. If you would like to talk with Larry Reed, president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, if you would like to disagree with what you're hearing, agree with what you're hearing, or ask a question I haven't thought of, 877-44-MITCH, and we'll interrupt immediately for that because your questions, as always, are more important than mine. At no time in any of the discussion, during the discussions about the tax, how we're going to fill this hole in the budget, did I hear any talk of meaningful government reform? Why is the public, Larry, not up in arms about this? Why are we being asked to tighten our belts to maintain the high salary levels and somewhat untouchable stature of this huge and bloated state government?
Well, I have to give the Senate some credit, John, because for much of the year, at least, they were talking about reforms. They put about $1 billion in spending reductions on the table. The Mackinac Center has recommended considerably more than that. Many of their recommendations we certainly agreed with. But in the end, because of the gridlock, because of the governor being of one party, and the along with the House and the Senate of another, the governor pretty much got her way. But I think the people in Michigan are up in arms, frankly. I think they're disgusted. Sadly, a lot of them have just sort of given up. We would encourage them not yet to do so because, you know, with every crisis you have opportunity. We're optimistic that we can undo some of this damage next year. But I have not yet run into anybody who is enthusiastic about what happened this year. I think there's a broad understanding that this was harmful to Michigan, that at a time when we are dead last in the country, you don't jack up taxes by $1.5 billion. And, of course, the way they did it was even worse, having to put together one package and barely 2 months later repeal a big chunk of it. It really was really a rather silly and awful year. We can hardly do any worse.
Let's talk specifically, and I've got a lot of callers that want to talk to you, but I want to talk specifically for just a second about what is going on within state government. Where are state government salaries in relation to the salaries of the common working stiff like me out here in the general public?
Well, we've documented, and much of this is on our website at mackinaw.org, that state salaries are out of proportion, or out of balance, I should say, with their counterparts in the private sector and with what most state employees are paid in other states. In fact, when it comes to, say, corrections officers, corrections employees, I should say, we're paying about one-third more than other states on average for essentially the same work within our correction system. There is an entitlement mentality within state government. It is not only within state government per se, but even its adjunct agencies and organizations at funds, like universities. They think that they're entitled to more. If they don't get it this year, they'll get it next year. If they don't get it from appropriations, they'll get it from tuition hikes or whatever. And there isn't a recognition that the private sector in Michigan is shrinking, and the public sector cannot continue to grow at the expense of the private sector, because it's the private sector that pays the bills of the public. They're just operating from almost from another planet in Lansing.
So in other words, they exist to serve us, not vice versa.
Well, that's sure the way it looks. When you look at who the forces were in Lansing, who held firm against meaningful reforms and who lobbied hard for the tax hikes, prominent among them were state employee labor unions and the Michigan Education Association, government employees who want more, even though the base, that is to say the private sector, from which we draw funds to pay these bills, is shrinking.
We're talking about some pretty gloomy stuff, but I promise you that we're going to get to some light at the end of the tunnel, which is not an oncoming train, before we let Larry go. Right now we're going to get back to the phones, and we'll start out with Kim in White Lake here on News Talk 760 WJR. Go ahead, please, Kim.
Well, you made a remark earlier about why people aren't up in arms about what's going on in the state, and we are, but it just seems the government does what they want anyway, regardless of how we all feel, i.e. the state of Michigan new police post that nobody knew anything about and they're throwing at us right after they raise our taxes.
Larry, comment?
Well, yeah, I think I'll just reiterate what I said before, that I think people are up in arms all over the state, that new police state police post that will cost tens of millions of dollars has generated an awful lot of heat. But for the moment, Lansing isn't listening. But maybe in 2008, voters and the citizens of this state will have a chance to really let their voices be heard. And I predict that they will.
All right, Kim, thank you very much for the call, and let's hope that Larry's right. Tim in Brooklyn has a good point here on News Talk 760 WJR. Go ahead, Tim.
Hi, thanks for letting me comment. Very good points on here, and I think one thing I noticed was that the legislature with the term limits has put some extremely inexperienced legislators in there. I think that's contributing to the gridlock where they can't form relationships. It's been too short a time. And then as soon as they do and make some friends across the party lines, they get booted out of there because of the term limits. I think that's been a huge problem. What do you think about that?
Other people have raised that question, Larry. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think term limits really are to blame for this. We've had gridlock. We've had massive tax hikes in the past. Remember in 1983 when we had a whopping 38% increase in income tax in the face of a budget deficit under Governor Blanchard. That was a non-term limited legislature that gave us that. Nonetheless, I hear what the caller is saying. I think Tim is right to some degree that we have people in Lansing who are inexperienced. That's why I think there's going to be attention paid next year to the possibility of making Michigan a part-time legislature state.
That makes a lot of sense to a lot of people I don't want to get into it now because it's a little bit complicated, but it does work in so many other states that are doing it.
Oh, yeah. There are about 40 states that have part-time legislatures, including many big ones, Texas. Not only do they have a legislature that meets only 3 or 4 months out of the year, they only meet every other year unless the governor calls them into special session. And it's arguably a better governed state than Michigan.
And while realistically on paper, thanks very much for the call, realistically on paper, that wouldn't amount to that much of a savings, what it does do for the months that they aren't in Lansing, they aren't passing any laws. And
exactly, and that's the problem. I mean,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's the problem. If you go to, we have two websites. The second one is MichiganVotes.org. You can see every bill and every amendment that's introduced in the legislature, and it's monumental in number. I mean, they twiddle their thumbs and look for all sorts of things to introduce bills for, things that aren't even the proper province of state government, and because they're there from January through till December.
Yeah, and they get involved in things, as you point out, that government has no business in. Somebody
right.
has got to get the message across, we're not a socialist state.
That's right. If we tell them, look, you have from January through March to tend to the state's business and get out of town, get back into the private sector and personally experience the taxes and regulations that you've passed on the people of Michigan, you're going to get a more realistic legislature and one that doesn't wrap up its time with a lot of trivia and intrusive nuisance legislation.
Jim in South Lyon on the Mitch Albom Show. Go ahead, please, Jim.
Merry Christmas, gentlemen.
Merry Christmas, Jim.
And you.
Two quick questions for you. First, I've heard you mention in the past consolidating the school districts, and I was just curious, how much would we save if we did consolidate, and what would that look like? And second, what percent of the blame would you put at the governor's feet versus the legislature's feet for what happened this year?
Okay. If you go to our website at Mackinac.org and type in school consolidation, you can go to a recent report that we released earlier this year. And the bottom line of that report is that although there can be some savings, the possibility of savings through school consolidation is actually overdone, and the savings aren't huge to be realized there. Where you get the real savings is by encouraging competitive contracting for school support services. Now, the second question about how I would apportion the blame in Lansing, well, I'd have to say that the lion's share of it goes to the governor, because she could have insisted on reforms and tax reductions, or at least no tax hikes, but she took another tack. And after all was said and done, she did come out and say, well, that was so difficult, I'm never going to do that again. Next time it's going to be spending reductions and reforms. But many of us wondered, well, why didn't you take that approach this time? These kinds of things like reforms and spending reductions could have sailed through had she not made it plain from the start she wouldn't go for it.
Yeah, and thanks for the call. We're faced with a situation now where we have to do something, don't we, Larry? We've got to take some steps, one of which I believe, and people get angry with me when I say this, and I know a lot of teachers, doggone it, you got to start having a copay, just like the rest of us do,
yeah,
in that insurance
right.
program. How much money would that save?
Well, by some estimates, if there were truly competitive contracting for an open bidding for teacher health insurance, we could save more than $400 million a year. An independent group called the Hay Group came out with $422. We've estimated something in that neighborhood as well. And the legislature did make a move in the right direction this year. They did pass a bill as part of that tax hike package that requires the Teachers Union's health insurance subsidiary to cough up the claims histories that they have heretofore held to and prevented school districts from looking at so that you can competitively contract. So there's enormous savings there. And another thing Michigan needs to do is seriously consider voluntary unionism.
You mean a right-to-work state?
Yeah, exactly. I think our labor climate here acts as such a deterrent in both perception and reality to businesses here and around the country that there's nothing I can think of that would more dramatically send a powerful message that we're open for business in Michigan than to make our state the 23rd right-to-work state. That might happen in 2008.
Russell, you're going to have the last word from the listeners on this issue here on News Talk 760 WJR. Go ahead, please, Russell.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a small retailer with getting socked by the minimum wage going up, and I was just wondering if the gentleman from the Mackinac organization had a comment about the minimum wage being shot up from, well, the federal was last year about 5.25 and went up in Michigan to 6.95, and this summer it's going to be 7.40. And I'm just wondering why anybody wants to open in this state.
Yeah, great question. This is one of those issues that politicians love to demagogue, but the fact remains you cannot make a person worth a certain amount by making it illegal to pay him any less. The minimum wage essentially says to people, if you can't find a job that pays at least what politicians declare as the minimum, you're not allowed to work. It raises costs throughout the economy. If it made sense at all, I don't know why they'd settle for $7 or $8. Why don't they make it $50 an hour? The fact is, it costs jobs, and it hurts the people it's intended to help the most, the low-skilled, the inexperienced, the people just getting a start on the economic ladder. They're the ones who can be priced out of the labor market every time the minimum wage is increased.
Larry Reed, president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, what should, in 30 seconds now, Joe Lunchbucket, like me, what should we do? What should we be doing to make a difference, to bring our state back to where it needs to be?
Well, I think you need to let your legislator know that you don't want more goodies from Lansing. You want Lansing to get out of your pocket, off your back, and out of the way. Cut spending and make Michigan a right-to-work state, and then we'd be on our way to recovery.
Larry, thanks so much for being with us. You're always informative, and you always make so much sense, which may be one of the reasons that you are not welcomed with a red carpet in Lansing when you go there. I'm not sure. Thanks again.
Thank you, John. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.